Hello and welcome to Wine Blast. I'm Susie, he's Peter, you know how it goes. So let's just skip straight to the good stuff, shall we? Because in this episode, we are going gaga for Garnacha.
Way!
Or is it Grenache?
Ah, getting into the controversy, the politics right from the off. Love that, love that. I say we call it, you know, whatever the hell we want to call it.
Within reason.
As long as it's not Keith. I'd say that's within reason, because Keith is Keith. You know, Keith is not Garnacha.
Yeah, anyway,
Garnacha, as it's known in Spanish-speaking countries, or Grenache in French, is very much the hero of our story today, whatever its name. It's a red grape variety that in many parts of the world was written off as kind of a rustic workhorse variety, but which is now taking the wine world by storm as it kind of shakes off its shabby country garb and dazzles us all with its elegance and refinement. And also resilience in the face of climate change.
Yep, I mean, there is an element of zero to hero in this story, which I know will be keeping you, Mr. Richards, very happy.
Oh, I do love a hero story.
We know. Now, this transformation has been dubbed the Grenaissance.
Nice.
See what they've done there?
Nice.
And it's been described as, and I quote, one of the most exciting developments in red wine today. Now, we have to confess a personal journey here too, because whisper it, for a long time we weren't really the biggest fans of Grenache.
Heresy, I know, but it's the truth. It is the truth. Mm. And we have our reasons, but that's also part of the story too, which we'll be telling. So anyway, let's hear a taster of what's coming up.
The Grenache can be also very complex, fine, and oh my God, super mystery. So this is the most beautiful thing. Now I'm just in love.
Garnacha is the music, is the poetry, is the intellectuality.
I call myself Garnacha Samurai. Garnacha is like a diamond with many faces, like a terroir translator. It's a grape that really shows the place where it comes from.
Spanish winemaking greats Álvaro Palacios, Sara Pérez and Fernando Mora there, all of whom we'll be hearing more from in due course, in addition to a few other key voices in the Garnachista movement in Spain, which is so exciting right now.
Yes, we are going to unashamedly focus on Spain in this episode, and primarily because it is one of, if not the key epicentres in this fascinating and delicious Garnacha revival, but also because it's what we were asked to do. And we do what we're asked to do, usually.
We do, indeed.
Or told, in my case. We were asked by Garnacha Man, and that is his Instagram handle, Ilya Kirilin.
Yep. Listener Ilya kindly wrote in from Madrid to say the following. Thank you for the podcast. It's definitely the kind of wine content we all need. Full of knowledge, but without any snobbery. Now, I've been listening for quite some time and haven't heard much about Spanish wines, especially about Garnacha / Grenache, of which I'm a huge fan. We are seeing a truly massive move in Spain and Garnacha. Every region is trying to find its own identity with very diverse terroirs. So, why don't you make an episode about this new wave Garnacha movement that actually explains a lot of what is happening in Spain?
A very, very good question. Thank you, Ilya. And can I just take a moment to say thank you for all the brilliant questions that have been coming in of late. You know, we really appreciate you getting in touch. So many fascinating topics. And this question is a particularly good one because it kind of sent us off on an adventure, didn't it?
It sort of became clear that diving into Grenache was just meant to be. We had this question and spending a bit of time looking at Spain was overdue, it has to be said.
Definitely.
But then I co-hosted a fascinating seminar on old vine Grenache from around the world, which included amazing wines from Australia, France, the US and Spain.
Yeah, that was amazing.
It was. And that kind of got the imagination firing, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And then you did a whole bunch of stuff on this too, didn't you?
Exactly, yeah. I gave a masterclass in Barcelona that touched on Garnacha. I also went to a fascinating couple of tastings, one with Álvaro Palacios, who makes L'Ermita, I'm sure you'll know, one of Spain's most expensive wines, among other things. And then another tasting called Viñateros, which was just the most sensational gathering of Spanish winemakers and wines in London. And Garnacha was the absolute star of that particular show.
Anyway, so all of this, we realised, didn't we, was the cosmos sending us a sign, a giant flashing neon sign even we wine nerds with our heads permanently in the bottom of a glass couldn't miss. It is time to talk Garnacha.
So there we go. Yet more proof that this podcast channels the will of the cosmos directly into your ears, as if you ever doubted. But we need to start at the beginning, set the scene a bit. So you've very cleverly given us our starting point there, because, you know, we need to pick up on this whole business of the name of this grape variety. It's important. Let's clear it up.
It is indeed. It is indeed. So it's known as Grenache in France, which is a nice name because it flows and sounds soft and mellifluous.
Yeah, doesn't it?
Plus, it's only two syllables, so it's obviously easier to say than Garnacha, which you have to chew a bit more, don't you, before you spit it out.
Yeah, they love a bit of sort of linguistic mastication, don't they, in Spain and South America. It almost has a sort of a bit more energy and urgency to it, doesn't it? Almost a sort of earnestness. Garnacha. sounds very sort of, I don't know, contundent. But actually, you know, neither of these is entirely accurate, of course, because, you know, we should be defining it as Garnacha Tinta or Grenache Noir, because there are different kinds of Garnacha. There's red Garnacha, white Garnacha, grey Garnacha. There's even hairy Garnacha, which sounds much better in Spanish, peluda, Garnacha peluda. But it's still a bit odd, isn't it?
Yeah, but don't be alarmed, because you don't get hairs in your wine. Oh, the thought of that is just horrible. The hairy bit is because the underside of its leaf is downy or, you know, furry.
Yeah, furry definitely.
Furry.
Definitely sounds better, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's slightly cuter and a bit more cuddly.
Anyway. But no, you're right. This is a diverse family of grapes, of which Garnacha Tinta is the main one. Mm. And diversity in wine grapes usually means it's an old variety, which it is. And it's undergone several mutations. Mm. And actually, this diversity is also being used to settle an old argument about where its origins lie, which is the subject of quite a lot of controversy.
Yeah,
isn't
aren't there sort of quite heated exchanges between Spain and Italy over this one?
Yeah, yeah. So Spain has long been thought to be the cradle of Garnacha, with the region of Aragon in northeast Spain looking like the most likely spot. And we'll come back to Aragon later, actually. Mm, yeah. But Garnacha is also grown in Italy. It's known as Canano in Sardinia, for example. And Italian researchers have said, hang on, you know, Sardinia's got a lot of this stuff and it's mentioned in these very historical documents. Yeah. So we think it's ours.
And what do the Spanish say?
They chewed it over for a bit. say no more. But no, I mean, both these theories are plausible. It's probably impossible to say definitively which is true. Mm. But in the Bible, that is wine grapes, it does say that Spain is the more likely origin point, and that's from a genetic perspective, because in Spain, you find all three colour variants of Garnacha, as well as mutations like the furry version. Mm. And there's also significant clonal diversity there, which you don't get to the same extent in Sardinia. Mm. And usually, the longer a grape variety has been in a place, the more likely it is to mutate.
Okay, so another reason to call it Garnacha then, if we're being historically accurate, I suppose.
I think so.
What about how it is in the vineyard, how it grows?
Well, it's a bit like me. It loves the sun.
Like you.
It's a bit like me. It's a late ripener, so it needs a warm climate.
And you need a warm climate too. Yes,
it's also fairly hardy and resilient.
And you being a fine Yorkshire stock, you know, hardiness runs through your veins. But it's equally, it's not like you. In that it's not particularly thirsty.
A bit rude, but true. It has good drought resistance, so it can get by on very little liquid, unlike me.
No comment.
And that's especially when it's grown in bush vines. Mm. It also has good resistance to fungal diseases like Esca and Eutypa, which may explain why there are so many old Garnacha vines in the world, which are obviously highly prized.
Yeah, I'll resist the temptation to take that comparison further when we're talking about fungal diseases,
etc.
Now, we'll be coming on to how the wines taste shortly. But, you know, in brief, winemakers like the old vines because they give lower yields of fruit that has better balance of flavours and gets ripeness at a lower alcohol level. Sometimes in Garnacha, the problem is that the sugar levels can be really high, colour and acidity levels can be really low, and young vines can just be really overly vigorous and can be problematic there. But with older vines in the right spots, the concentration is better, the balance is better, so that just makes for more harmonious, fresh, sort of complex wines.
Now, all these things together, the you know, the hardiness, the longevity, the long history, made Garnacha pretty popular. At one point, it was the fourth most widely planted wine grape in the world, covering over 200,000 hectares. But between 1990 and 2016, according to Kim Anderson and Signe Nelgen's Which Wine Grapes Where, its planted area almost halved.
So down by a half. And why do we think that was?
It just wasn't very fashionable. You know, the grapes that grew fastest in that time were the likes of Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon, Chardonnay, Tempranillo, Syrah. You know, the cool gang, if you like. You know, Garnacha was seen as being a workhorse variety.
Yeah.
It was often blended in rosé or everyday reds. And even when it was doing amazing things, for example, in Châteauneuf-du-Pape, where it is the key grape variety, you know, Chateau Rias, oh my God, or in GSM blends, you know, Grenache, Syrah, Mourvèdre, another Rhone-inspired combination, it didn't necessarily feature on the label. So it kind of sailed under the radar and it didn't get the kudos it deserved.
Yeah, interesting that, actually. And talking of France, I was interested to see, or I was going through the stats, that there's more Grenache planted in France than in Spain. It's the key country for it. So it's actually the third, Grenache is actually the third most planted grape variety in France after Merlot and Trebbiano, or Uniblanc, which is sort of southwest France, mainly for cognac, for distillation, cognac and Armagnac and stuff. And that's really surprising. I suppose until you think of the southern Rhone and then Languedoc-Roussillon, where it's widespread and which are sort of very large regions. It's the most planted variety in Roussillon, for example, and makes great fortified wines, as we know. We're absolutely massive fans of those, as well as, you know, beautiful reds. And then, of course, all those Grenache-based rosés in the south of France and Provence. So when you start thinking about all of that, you think, oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
But it's amazing still to think it's ahead of the likes of Pinot Noir, Cabernet Sauvignon, Chardonnay, Syrah, Gamay, all those other emblematic grape varieties from France.
That's true.
And I suppose you could say, yes, it's not the fourth most planted grape variety in the world anymore, but it is still seventh. And that's ahead of the likes of Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, Sangiovese, Riesling, etc.
Yeah, and I also think that we're at something of a, you could call it an inflection point, you know, where Grenache may start to pick back up as well. If you look at the latest figures in Spain, for example, you actually see a bit of growth over the last 5 years. It's up from sort of 53,500 hectares in 2018 to just over 59,000 hectares in 2022. You know, and I don't think this will just be limited to Spain either. I think we may see this trend picking up all around the world. Well, in certain parts of the world, but globally. Anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself here. We're going to come on to this. I think we should bring in our first guest, Sara Perez.
So, Sara Perez is a fabulous, fearless woman who makes wine at Mas Martinet in Priorat and Venus La Universal in Montsant in Spain's northeastern region of Catalonia, where grapes like Garnacha and Carignana, or Carignan, are highly prized. She is one of Spain's superstar winemakers, known for her uncompromising vision and incisive mind.
Now, I was lucky enough to spirit her off to a side room at the Viñateros tasting, which you can hear buzzing away in the background. And I asked her what she thought of Garnacha.
Garnacha, it's one of the two traditional varieties in Priorat and Montsant. The other is Carignan. And usually Garnachist or a Carignanist, and I was defining myself during a lot of years as Carignanist and not Garnachist, because for me Priorat is a very rude and rustic and difficult and tragic place, and for me Carignan was a perfect variety for expressing that. But well, life, you know, it's life. And then we found a just magic place where before the phylloxera, there were a vineyard there. And the ancient people say, I wanted to plant their Carignan, of course. And the old people, they say to me, oh, no, don't be wrong. Here, they had pure Grenache. So I decided to plant the Grenache, and so afraid about the result. And then now I'm just in love.
So what is it about Grenache that has made you fall in love with it?
Well, for me, the Grenache during the 90s and from the south was that expression of super sweet and powerful and round and seductive and fruit. And for me, it was too much.
Too much.
You know, I need more complexity, more different things, you know?
Mystery, a bit of mystery, yeah. A bit of...
elegance, just complexity is more for me. So through the Grenache, I thought that was impossible to get. But after planting that vineyard, I was trying to make just a cuvée from a single vineyard. And I was discovering that, wow, this is not Grenache, you know? This is the vineyard, this is the finca, this is the... So... now I think that the Grenache can be also very complex, fine, and oh my God, and super mystery.
So, which is that vineyard?
Escoursons.
Escoursons. So, Grenache is capable of expressing terroir.
Yeah, but the Grenache has a very powerful grape variety expression. So, when we focus on that, it's not possible to express terroir. Mm. But when we forget that and just pay attention about the vineyard and not the variety, then the Grenache is able, you know, to express that place. So this is the most beautiful thing.
So what's the secret then to really getting Grenache to express its terroir? Is that a case of harvesting at the right time?
Grenache is that in a place as Priorat, we are harvesting too late. Mm. We are waiting for that super dark color and super tannins and super concentration and super everything. And then we are losing the most finest expression of the Grenache, of the terroir. In Priorat, the DNA of our soil is fire. So at the beginning, I used to pick when the Grenache was very dark, then destem, then ferment in oak, and then aging in oak. And all of that things were just putting volume on the fruit and concentration and grape variety, you know, that sense. But if I wanted to attemperate that fire, then everything is complex and it's appearing, you know, and that means just picking earlier, working with 100% stems, whole bunches but crush, and then working with recipients in fermentation, that it's very, very important, and aging, cold ones, as clay amphora or demijohn glass or concrete, but not oak. So just changing that things, everything explodes, you know.
So you're tempering the fire, yeah. But even in doing this, you still have an explosion of a beautiful wine.
Yeah.
So in your mind, is Grenache a truly fine wine grape variety?
Yes, but I think that we put a lot of pressure on the grape variety. And then, you know, the decisions are our decisions. So I can say yes, and then you can bring to me a lot of hundreds and hundreds of wines that are, you know, showing the opposite. So yes, you know, the Grenache has this ability for itself, yes. On the other hand, we can let it show or not, you know.
In your mind, what are the best three things about Grenache?
Wow. Fragility and complexity. These two things are the two things that I've discovered working different. And during a lot of years, I was thinking about the opposite. So it's like vulnerability, you know? Mm-hmm. It's something that when you just take care and paying attention, the Grenache is just showing up fragility and complexity part that we are losing when we are working in another way. For me, it's two things, not three.
Well, I'd say fragility, complexity, vulnerability. That's a lovely three thing. What about the future? What does the future hold for Garnacha?
Well, I think it's super, no? I think around the world, people is like discovering that super nice variety. And now we can plant Grenache around. And if we are enough brave not to make an homogenic Grenache around the world, I think the Grenache can help everywhere to show the different terroirs.
Sarah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's so interesting to hear her personal conversion to the creed of Garnacha.
Yeah,
I mean, she's very honest, isn't she?
Yeah.
You know, to say it wasn't her cup of tea, that she actually preferred Carignan in Priorat, but she came around to Garnacha once she saw how, if you farm it right, in the right place, it can make beautiful terroir wine. And so she's changed her mind.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. And as you say, she's really honest, as the best winemakers are. You know, and I love the way she describes Garnacha as kind of a fragile and vulnerable and complex grape variety. It sounds like it needs a psychotherapist. but the best wines are, you know, often puzzles, aren't they? They're not straightforward or obvious.
No.
And I have to say that the vineyard and wine she's talking about, the Mas Martinet Els Escursons, is absolutely stunning.
Oh, quite right.
Isn't
I
it?
Mean, you know, we've both enjoyed that wine a few times lately.
Yes.
And it's just stunning.
Yeah, it's
you know,
beautiful.
I had the 2016, you had the 2019 and 2021. Mm-hmm. And it's just so perfumed and floral. It's got a real violet character and then very fine, but firm, you know, grippy, serious palate.
Yeah.
And there's a bit of a funky, smoky, flinty edge. I mean, there's just so much going on in that wine.
Yeah.
But also, it manages to be very poised and elegant and a world away from the bruising Priorat reds of the past.
Totally.
You know, I actually remember going to Priorat and Montsant. For some reason, I went sort of two or three times at the beginning of the 2000s. And those wines were huge.
Yeah, they were. They were totally.
And,
huge. And I visited, and it was a world apart from what's happening today, isn't it? And Sarah actually referenced that in what she said, didn't she? She said Priorat, Montsant, you know, these are Mediterranean areas, or more so, I guess, than Garnacha's heartland in Aragon and Rioja. So you can get Garnacha really ripe and thick there. But in doing that, you lose the elegance, you lose terroir expression, you lose refreshment value and drinkability in the wines. And that was what happened in the 90s and early 2000s, driven by the prevailing fashion for super ripe, flashy wines, you know, often with lashings of oak and loads of alcohol and low acidity.
And I mean, that was partly why we weren't big fans of Grenache either, were
totally,
we?
Totally.
You know, the wines were often just too big, too bruising, too sweet. As I'm sure many of our listeners do, we prefer elegant, refreshing wines that tantalise the taste buds rather than brutalise the brain. But when you taste a wine like Els Escursons, it shows you how far Garnacha has come nowadays, even in a place like Priorat.
Yeah, and I know that Sarah also makes wines in Montsant, which tend to be a bit cheaper than Priorat. It's a good tip generally. And her Venus La Universelle 2018 Garnacha is half the price of Escursons, but is a delicious Garnacha too, very much in the same mould. Ripe, it's a bit riper perhaps, but it's fresh and spicy and very, very Moorish.
Good tip. Right. So coming up, we're going to hear from Alvaro Palacios, Fernando Mora and Flying Scotsman Nora Robertson. Mm-hmm. We'll also be recommending plenty more sensational Garnachas. To recap so far, Garnacha is known by many names, but it's one of the most important wine grapes in the world. It fell out of favour for a while, but is now experiencing a renaissance, led by forward-thinking growers in Spain making ever more complex terroir wines, showcasing the potential of this grape for diversity and elegance.
So we heard in the intro from Alvaro Palacios, as we said, he's one of the most famous winemakers in Spain. Originally from Rioja, he eloped to Priorat to create L'Ermita, one of Spain's most iconic wines, made largely from Garnacha, it should be noted. Alvaro has several projects these days, but one of them is back in his homeland of Rioja, breathing new life into Rioja Oriental, as it's called, the eastern part of the region.
And he's using mostly Garnacha there.
Exactly. So that's the traditional grape of that warmer part of Rioja, which used to be looked down on, you know, compared to the more aristocratic, cooler parts of Rioja with their fine Tempranillos. Anyway, he's doing great things there. He's got a wine called Finca La Montesa, which is really good value Rioja Garnacha. The 2021 vintage is really excellent. Very elegant, very perfumed, really good tension too. He's also got fancier stuff like the Alfaro Quiñón de Valmira, single vineyard from Sierra de Yerga, which is just stunning Garnacha. It's so floral, it's perfumed, it's just got a heavenly scent. Really lend on the palate, grippy tannin, juicy acidity. It's hugely impressive wine. It blew me away. And I have to say, I confess, I preferred it to Lermita when I tasted them alongside each other.
Really?
So there we have it.
And this was from the tasting you went to, hosted by him.
Exactly. Him and his daughter, Lola, who's joined the family business and is great. Anyway, I did want to play a very brief clip from that tasting. Now, this was a live event, so it's a crude recording. But I did ask him for his take on Garnacha in Spain. And this is what he said.
Bueno, first of all, I am not Mr. Garnacha. I only love the places, the sites. By coincidence, I was born in a place of Garnacha and I went to Riora. Riora is a Garnacha region. You find very good cariñenas. Pero Garnacha is the music, is the poetry, is the intellectuality, charmingness and the ancient. So Garnacha, it has been already, after being so denosted, neglected, that young guys, younger than me, all that young people, has been believing in the ancestral traditions. They have been making some little beautiful noise in some areas of good markets and good consumers. But Aragon is also showing, with Fernando Mora and others, showing a beautiful Garnacha, coño, qué maravilla. And the future is going to be more and more Garnacha, probably.
I'm not sure we entirely buy that line that he's not Mr. Garnacha. No. But I suppose he does do many things. Mm. And other people probably have more justification for wanting to claim that title. Mm. But whether he likes it or not, he has been one of the key players in putting Garnacha on the map, hasn't
totally,
he?
Totally. Though you sense he has sort of mixed feelings about it. I think that's maybe where he's saying he's not Mr. Garnacha. Because he did call it capricious and difficult to grow. Mm. He even termed it a spoiled baby variety at this tasting. So I think maybe the frustration of a grower showing through there. But interestingly, he hinted that he'd heard murmurs in Rioja that given climate change and other factors, even the posh western end of the region might be thinking of diversifying their grape varieties further beyond Tempranillo. And he hinted that Garnacha may start creeping in there.
Wow, interesting. That would be pretty revolutionary, wouldn't it? And talking of revolution, I think at this point we should bring in someone who has been on the very top of the barricades waving the Garnacha banner, Fernando Mora. In a relatively short time, Fernando has become a leading light in Spanish wine. He started out making wine in a bathtub in his flat, but his first professional vintage was 2009. And now he's renowned for crafting some of Spain's most refined and terroir-focused wines, mainly based on Garnacha, which is the staple in his home region of Aragon.
Yes, Fernando makes Bodegas Frontonio in Valdejalón, which is an area in between Calatayud, Cariñena and Campo de Borja in Aragon, in northeast Spain. These wines are fast gaining cult status. They sell on allocation and generally are things of beauty. He's a great thinker and keen intellect. He says, "We live in a world where simplicity is prized, but complexity is what keeps me interested." And we first met him when he was a sort of bright-eyed, incredibly perceptive student, didn't we, on our tasting boot camp for Master of Wine students.
I remember it well. A brilliant taster and thinker and just, yeah, a nice guy too. And of course, he passed the MW in super quick time with flying colours.
Yeah, no surprise. So Fernando was also at the Viñateros tasting in London and I kidnapped him briefly, just as I had with Sara, sat him down and asked him how important Garnacha is in his life.
So I call myself Garnacha Samurai because when I was making the Master of Wine, someone told me, "You are the Garnacha Samurai." So I appropriate that for me. So Garnacha is the grape of my region. We are in the home birthplace of Garnacha as a grape in the Ebro Valley, more in Aragon, but in the Ebro Valley. So Garnacha is very refined grape when it's in the right place and with the right handling, but can be bomb fruit or a fruit bomb when not. So Garnacha for me is the 90% of the wine that I am making. So for me, Garnacha is the triangle of Pinot Noir, Nebbiolo, Garnacha. So can be very delicate or can be hopefully not proper managed.
So you would put it in the same context as Pinot Noir and Nebbiolo, two grapes which make some of the most expensive wines in the world. For you, Garnacha belongs right in there with those others.
In the right places, can be. Because Garnacha is very terroir sensitive. That means that it's very plastic. So when I started making Garnachas, I realized that depending on the place that it was planted, my different plots of Garnacha tasted very different. With other grapes, there is not so much variation. So that's why I started to get interested into making single parcels. And so Garnacha is like a terroir translator. It's a grape that really shows the place where it comes from. And these are the great grapes, in my opinion, of the world. Those that really imprint very well the place.
And what for you are the best places for Garnacha?
So Garnacha is a grape that can ripe very well if you have illimited water content and sun, and that are not the most interesting examples. Garnacha works well with altitude and cooler expositions in moderate vigor soils, because when this grape is going to express better itself with more contention of sugar concentration and losing the less possible acidity and having a bit more of the red spectrum aromatics.
So that lightness, the elegance, the perfume, that's about having a site which is not going to get it too ripe and too jammy and too fruity.
Exactly.
And what's the secret to making a good Garnacha in terms of the human intervention?
Choosing the right place is the most important thing. Harvesting at the right time. Doing the right viticulture to can harvest in the right time. So that means like contenting vigor, the leaf in the right moment. So many things in the vineyard, harvesting at the right time. Doing a great selection, removing all the overripe grapes or underripe grapes. And also later on, for me, if well managed, stems in Garnacha are giving the grape the third dimension, are making them much more interesting in terms of freshness. Yeah. Also are increasing, because it's a thin skin grape, so with the stems we are increasing a bit the tannins that are making the wine capable to aging longer.
For those people who don't really understand about stems, could you just in very simple terms explain what you mean by using stems in a ferment?
So in the last 40 years, probably everybody started to remove the stems. That the stems are the green part that are forming a bunch with the grapes. So people start to remove this because sometimes this can give green aromatics to the wine. But when we are using very old vines with low vigor and very few kilograms per vine, these stems are very nice and ripe, and if you smell them, they are going to smell like thyme or rosemary or lavender. So we macerate over, we crush by feet with no removing these stems, so the fermentation takes place with this. And this, in my opinion, are giving to the wine, are influencing the wine. First, are decreasing a bit the acidity because are full of potassium, and this precipitates with the tartaric acid. Also, they are decreasing a bit the color because some of the color is getting color, the stems that are green, and when you finish the fermentation are red. And also are adding these beautiful, fine herbal aromatics that are great, and also are giving these more greenish tannins that are increasing the freshness perception in the mouth.
Now we've got a delicious bottle of your Garnacha in front of us. Can you describe for me and for our listeners, you, if you've got a great glass of Garnacha in front of you, what does it taste like?
Okay, Garnacha in the view is a pale ruby red, very, very clean and precise. In the nose, you have a hint of red fruit, more like wild strawberries, but also you have hints of blue orange, white oregano, and violets. And when you put that in the palate, you have a dry wine with super fresh acidity, moderate body, and firm but fine tannins. Having a wine with layers of complexity, a good balance between acidity and tannins, with complexity but without concentration. Because this is the thing. If we concentrate Garnacha, we lose the finesse.
What's the future for Garnacha?
Garnacha is like a diamond with many faces. So Garnacha is going to be a very well planted grape in the future in the right places, and is going to show, at least in Spain, the different climates and terroirs that we have. So I think it's going to gain reputation. It's not going to see anymore as a blended grape, but a grape with identity, showing something unique for its place. Because it's what I really think that is the magic of Garnacha, that is can express the place.
Fernando, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much for this. I really appreciate this. That after my teacher, you are today are interviewing me. It's something cool. Gracias.
Thanks, man. No, gracias a ti.
You taught him everything he knows, quite clearly.
Yeah, quite the opposite, actually. I think I learned more from him than vice versa. But, you know, he is the Garnacha samurai.
Indeed, see, indeed. All. So he said Garnacha is a diamond with many faces. Yeah. I love that.
No, it's nice.
And obviously he totally agrees with what Sara was saying about Garnacha being a terroir grape when it's at its best. And also interesting what he said about using the stems to give herbal perfume and freshness and grip,
yeah,
too.
Absolutely. Stems are something people talk about a lot with Garnacha. So it's good that we got into it a bit there, just as they do with, you know, Pinot Noir around the world.
Yeah.
And there are, of course, many similarities between the two grapes. Grenache is often called the warm climate Pinot Noir or the Pinot Noir of the Mediterranean because of its pale colour and potential for elegance and terroir expression. Also, its ability to do that even in pretty warm and dry areas where Pinot Noir can't really work so well.
Yeah. And talking of elegance, we wanted to recommend a couple of Fernando's wines from Bodega Frontonio, didn't we? So I'd like to tip the Las Alas de Frontonio La Tejera 2020. It just has such fragrant dark fruit with these floral rose petal overtones. It's incredibly elegant, and then with really fine filigree texture, chalky tannins, and lovely fresh acidity, and great length too.
It's a lovely, lovely wine.
It truly is.
I also like two of what I think are his slightly less expensive wines, La Cerqueta 2020, which is really sort of savoury and lifted. Also his Telescopico Garnacha 2020 has a kind of real potpourri fragrance. It's graceful, but it's grippy as well. There's a sort of theme here, isn't there? Also his Jardín de las Iguales 2021 is off the charts. It's just so serious, as well as being very scented and focused. Beautiful one.
Now, one final person you talked to at Viñateros was Alvaro Ribalta, also a master of wine, who lived in London for 15 years, working with importer Indigo Wines, before recently moving back to his home city of Barcelona and setting up an importer-distributor company called Massal Selection. Now, he had some interesting perspectives to share on Garnacha and its commercial potential across Spain, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. And I started by asking him how he rated Garnacha as a great variety.
How do I rate Garnacha? I think it's a great variety that is capable, like perhaps no other in Spain, to transmit terroir, to talk about its origin. Much better than Tempranillo, I think, if I'm honest. It can take whole bunch fermentation, which I love. And although it can make slightly richer styles of wine, it is also very capable to producing really fine, elegant, and lovely drinks.
Where are the greatest places in Spain for Garnacha right now?
Well, quite spoiled at the moment. Up until not very recently, Garnacha was almost a forgotten variety. So it was a very rustic sort of style of winemaking that made us forget about it. Whereas now we have an abundance of really amazing growers in many places. I think Gredos remains possibly the go-to place. Gredos is a mountain range about an hour west of Madrid. Beautiful granite soils, all bush vines, high altitude vineyards, and they produce styles quite lifted, quite fragrant, aromatic, perhaps even a little lighter. Then Rioja, especially Rioja Oriental, Montes de Yerga, and Alto Najerilla have really amazing old vineyards as well. And there's a growing number of producers that are basically understanding the region and also making varietal wines. Normally in those places, Garnacha was used in blends with Tempranillo, whereas now there's quite a lot of producers that are basically making really, really top wines. But then also places, Priorat, obviously, although that region went through a period of producing maybe two rich styles, for my liking at least, quite alcoholic and over-extracted and even over-oaked. But now there are more producers that are going back to the trend of making more elegant and restrained wines, normally in combination with Carignana, but also varietals. And obviously, we mustn't forget about Aragon with my friends Fernando Mora and Norrell Robertson in Valdejalón and Calatayud, respectively, making, I think, very pure styles and, again, lovely, lovely wines.
And how does Garnacha sell in the market?
Well, for us at Indigo, here in the UK, it sells rather well. There are similarities with other grape varieties such as Pinot Noir, I think. So if you're trying to get into a list, an international list, where consumers might not be very aware of the origin of the wine, for example, Aragon is not that well known in export markets. I think reflecting on the style and explaining that if they like that sort of lighter in terms of the tannin profile, wines that are not too oaky or too over-extracted, then that's a good way of sort of introducing the grape variety. But we're quite lucky that the market already knows Garnacha and understands that it's an international variety grown in other countries as well. So that helps, I think, the category.
So it sells well, possibly as an adjunct or alternative to Pinot Noir.
Yeah.
Lighter reds are all the rage these days.
They really are, actually. They really are. Exactly, yeah.
And there are lots of different pockets in Spain where Garnacha comes into its own, as Alvaro said, from Gredos to Priorat to Aragon, and of course, not forgetting Rioja.
Never forget Rioja in Spain. It looms large, doesn't it? Yeah, I mean, Spain has this huge wealth of old vine Garnacha spread right across the centre and northeast of the country. It's like a massive treasure chest with sort of jewels glinting in the sun just waiting to be polished up.
Like Fernando's diamonds.
Yeah, exactly. And if you look at the stats, which, as you know, I do.
You do.
Very regularly.
You do.
You see that the largest Garnacha Tinta vineyard in Spain is in Castilla-La Mancha, which is a huge area in the centre of the country, south of Madrid, with about 21,000 hectares. That's huge. Second largest is Aragon, so Fernando's area, with about 15,500 hectares of Garnacha Tinta. Then Castilla y León, Catalunya, and La Rioja came next, with just over 4,000 hectares each, followed by Madrid and Navarra. So, you know, lots of potential for diversity in there.
Absolutely. Talking of which, we wanted to very briefly recommend some other Spanish producers and wines, didn't we?
Absolutely. Well said. So near Madrid, we've got Viticola Mentridana with their Cantos del Diablo. In Gredos, Cadimat and their Los Peros 2021. Cuatro Monos and their Aguja del Fraile 2020. Also Daniel Ramos and his mad Capi Amphora 2019. Delicious too. Finally, Las Pedreras with their Las Arroyelos 2022. And they also make some cool sparkling from Garnacha too. Burbujas de Arquitón.
Brilliant.
Just cool.
And now I'd throw in Uvas Felices, also in Gredos, and their La Reina de los Deseos 2020, which has amazing perfume and very bold character, very serious tannins. So it's definitely a food wine.
There really are sort of all kinds of styles emerging, aren't there? And not just reds either. You know, we've mentioned bubbles.
Yeah.
There is also fortified, of course, rich whites and complex orange wines made from Garnacha Blanca. Herencia Altes Tremontiner is one I'd definitely recommend in the orange category. But I'm aware this is cheating, though, because Garnacha Blanca is not Garnacha Tinta.
It is cheating a little bit. But we really mustn't forget the range of rosé styles Garnacha can make.
That's right.
And which I think are finally getting beyond the boring tutti frutti or ultra pared back versions and starting to be made in more ambitious, complex styles.
Really well said. Rosé is a big thing here, and especially when it's made in complex, complex ways. I completely agree. This is something that can be a huge thing. Now, before we finish, there was one final aspect of Garnacha to consider, and that's its global future, you know, encompassing the key issue of climate change.
Yeah. Now, you caught up, didn't you, with Spanish wine producer Norrell Robertson at Barcelona Wine Week, which was pretty busy and noisy, so apologies for the sound quality, but this is only a brief clip. Norrell's another master of wine, originally from Scotland, but based in Spain for over 20 years now, in Aragon, focusing on old vine Garnacha. And he's been called the king of Garnacha, hasn't he?
Yeah, el rey de la Garnacha. I think he prefers the translation the laird. The laird. Sorry,
Hollywood.
Norrell, for that terrible accent, but the laird of Garnacha. But he's been rescuing old Garnacha vineyards, you know, making beautiful wines out of them for quite a while now. And he's become really quite passionate about it, understandably. And he says it's a variety that's very well suited to climate change. I asked him why.
It's what we call a pessimistic variety, okay? And if you compare it with something like Tempranillo, right? And this all comes from the DNA of Garnacha. So what it controls very well, I don't get too scientific here, but it controls very well potassium in the plant, okay? And potassium is responsible for the opening and closing of the stomata, the pores on the leaf, okay? So when you get into, you know, middle of summer in Spain, and it's getting up to 35, 40 degrees, the Garnacha plant does very well at closing its stomata, so it stops respiring and transpiring. Okay, whereas Tempranillo is a complete disaster. It's very much ingrained in the DNA of Garnacha, so it can handle drought very, very well. It just kind of sits there and vibrates gently and closes itself down.
So it's a survivor.
Exactly.
And how do you see the future of Garnacha?
Well, I think you're going to find more people planting a bit because of what we talked about. It's suited to warm climates and it's suited to climate change. I think we've already seen a great diversification of styles, more experimentation from winemakers. So I think it's very positive. You know, it's kind of gone from having that kind of, being known as the kind of workhorse variety of like bulk wine, high alcohol. And that's kind of changed, a bit of a sea change. Now people think of it more as, you know, a more sensual, kind of adaptable variety where you can get lots of different styles of wine from.
A pessimistic variety. I love that. Yeah. It just does its own thing. Weathers the storms, sits it out. Yeah. But that's the kind of grape variety we need in a world of climate chaos, surely.
Totally. We talked about hardiness in our introduction. You know, Garnacha loves heat. It tolerates drought. It resists infection. And yet it can also make these wonderfully elegant terroir-driven wines. You know, these are exactly the kind of qualities we increasingly need in our vines as we try to adapt to climate change, as you say, and the sort of extreme, unpredictable weather events that it brings. So, you know, I think that bodes well for Garnacha's future.
Yeah, but as does the fact it's not just in Spain where it's making great wine. You know, it's obviously doing great things in Châteauneuf-du-Pape and the wider southern Rhone and Languedoc-Roussillon. Also places like South Africa, Chile. There's a fair bit in North Africa too, like Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia. But in this context, I would particularly point to Australia.
Yeah, some really old vines there, aren't there?
There are some of the oldest Grenache vines in the world, apparently, including some ungrafted ones. So it came over in the 1830s, 1840s and was used for fortified production. It became the country's most widely planted grape variety, most widely planted in the 1960s or by the 1960s.
Don't think of that in Australia, do you?
No, seriously. But then it fell out of favour and was grubbed up for being uncommercial. But the old vines that have survived are now producing some seriously complex, unique wines, particularly in places like McLaren Vale and Barossa. And the value of the grapes and those wines has shot up recently, which I think just reflects this newfound popularity.
Yeah. Any sort of producers or wines you particularly recommend?
Well, in the panel tasting we did, and also tasting through Matthew Jukes's 100 Best Australian Wines, which is an excellent selection, by the way, well worth checking out.
Yeah.
Anyway, from those, I definitely found some superstars.
Yeah.
Things like Ministry of Clouds Kintsugi Grenache 2018 from McLaren. It's so stylish, so kind of ethereal. Then you've got Alkina Polygon 5 Grenache 2020 from Barossa, very fragrant and fine. And their kin 22, actually, Alkina's kin, is excellent value as well. Also, well, it's excellent value. I was going to say the Polygon's much more expensive, so the kin is the value one. Also, Thistledown's This Charming Man 2021 from McLaren is ripe and plummy, but also savoury. And then An Approach to Relaxation, Sucette Grenache 2019, love that name, is spicy and long and plump and just delicious.
Sounds like you could go on.
I could. I really could. I won't, but we'll be here all day if I do. But just quickly, other names I would recommend in terms of Australian Grenache are SC Pennell, MMAD Vineyard, Willunga, John Duval, Yolumba and Charles Melton. And it's great to see this Grenache uplift also going great guns in Australia, you know, and putting the emphasis on this amazing old vine heritage and the skill of the winemakers.
Yeah.
And then just to touch on the US for a moment, I did also like the Language of Yes Grenache 2020 from Santa Maria in California. It's just so full of energy.
So truly a global phenomenon now, this Grenaissance. So exciting to see. I'd actually throw in, because I forgot to do so earlier, a couple of wines from Norrell Robertson, his El Cismatico 2020, which is a riper, richer expression, but still utterly joyful. And then also his elegant and expressive Val de la Barga 2021, both from Aragon, both delicious wines.
So there we have it. The wonderful world of Garnacha in a pod.
There we go.
Time for a closing summary. Garnacha, or Grenache, is a grape variety reborn. One of the world's most widely planted wine grapes, it's laboured in the shadows for decades, if not centuries, blended away or uncredited on labels. But now it's rightly championed as a grape of finesse and elegance, as well as complexity and terroir expression. What's more, its innate hardiness means it's well set to weather the many challenges of climate change. Cutting-edge winemakers in Spain are leading the new wave Garnacha charge, harvesting early, using stems but not new oak, managing extractions carefully. But it's a variety that's producing exciting wines in many parts of the world and looks set to have a bright future globally.
Even us long-term Garnacha sceptics have been converted to the cause these days. So if you haven't yet, or if you've been stuck in just one particular Grenache rut, it's well worth broadening your horizons. This is definitely one to watch.
So our thanks to Sara Perez, Fernando Mora, Alvaro Palacios, Alvaro Ribalta and Norrell Robertson. And to Ilya Kirillin for the excellent question. I hope we've managed to do it justice. thanks also to you for listening. If you like what you've heard, make sure you subscribe and please do consider rating and reviewing the pod or recommending it to a friend or two. It really helps and we very much appreciate it. Until next time, cheers.